Chu said. It was harder for the ancients to build windbreaks and aqueducts, and they didn't have large trade operations to resupply cities with food, so everything was constructed on a much smaller scale. Lopan turned around in a circle, feeling like those broken buildings were skulls, with sunken eye sockets for windows, all dripping with hardened creme. Rushu sent the sailors to go searching through some of those, and he shivered. Why was he so nervous about this place?
I don't know that we'll find anything useful in here, Rushu, he said, scanning about. The place is less ruins than rubble.
The fact that it exists in such an undisturbed state is monumentally important, Lopan, Rushu said. It will be of great interest to archaeologists and historians. The more we've learned about the recreants, the more we've realized that our understanding of the past is painfully incomplete.
I suppose, Lopan said, as she held up her little map. Any idea where the Oath Gate would be?
Well, the optimal place would be in the center of the city for equilateral access, Rushu said. Either that, or nearest the docks for maximum trade convenience. Unfortunately, judging by the three in Azamir, Kolinar, and Thalen City, the Oath Gates were not placed optimally. Instead, all three are within convenient access of the ruling class.
Stormin' light eyes, Lopan muttered, always making things more difficult for us common folk.
Us common folk? She asked. You are a knight radiant.
The most common one.
You frequently tell me how uncommon you are, Lopan.
It's only a contradiction if you think about it.
I have no response to that.
See? You are getting it already. So, where would the rich folks have been in this city?
My guess is those larger lumps over there. The Oath Gates tend to be on large platforms, and that section seems to be raised higher than the surroundings. They began walking toward the ruins she had indicated. As they did, Lopan found himself holding his spear tightly and checking over his shoulder. And storms. It wasn't just him being jumpy. There was something unnerving about this place. With those clouds overhead, the distant fog, the stillness. It was, sure, a mausoleum. But instead of being for kings and such, it was for an entire people. This had once been a vibrant capital, a center of trade. It wasn't simply ruins, it was lonely ruins. Always overcast and never seeing the sun, but also never seeing rain or storm. Was that why Rissen's porter had worked so hard to keep them away? To prevent them from disturbing the place's slumber? Or had Lopan listened to one too many of Rock's firelight stories about spirits and gods? At any rate, he nearly jumped all the way to the halls when someone came around the corner. Lopan yelled and drew in Stormlight, then felt foolish. It was only Plov, one of the sailors.
"Message for Ardent Rushu," he said, "from the Rebsk."
Rushu took the note and read it while Lopan scanned the ruins again. He spotted all eight sailors, and a part of him was surprised that one hadn't vanished mysteriously. He ought to go tell them to stick together, just in case.
"Curious," Rushu said, tucking away the note.
"What does she say?"
"It's a warning," Rushu said. "She thinks everything about this place is too expected, too perfect. An opening in the stones out in the water leading toward a perfect landing beach with gemstones littered around for the taking? I suppose even these ruins are exactly as I imagined them."
"So what does it mean?" Lopan asked.
"I'm not sure. Did you by chance grab any of those gemstones on the beach?"
Lopan fished in his pocket for the small gem heart he'd picked up earlier.
"Grabbed one," he said. "I was going to ask you what you thought about there being no creme on it, but got distracted."
She took it from his fingers, then brought out a jeweler's loop and began inspecting it.
"You carry one of those in your pocket?" Lopan asked.
"Doesn't everyone?" she said absently. I can't be certain as I'm no expert, but I think... Lopin, I think this is a fake. Quartz, not a diamond.
He frowned, taking it back. Quartz couldn't hold stormlight, and it could be made by a soul caster.
You think they might all be fakes?
It's possible.
Lopin gave a mighty sigh.
And thus my great fortune evaporates like a man's beauty upon the weathering shores of time. Like how that one time I sure almost had a chasm-beamed pet that would...
Yes, you've told me, Rushu said. 6 times.
I have a new joke, though, Lopin said, for the end of the story. I'm going to say, and that is why I let it eat my arm. Funny, yes? Well, it will be. Eventually.
He tossed the fake gem heart up in the air and caught it again.
So why make these? Why set this place up to appear so rich?
I'm wondering the same thing, Rushu said.
They wanted to wow us, maybe, Lopin said. Perhaps they thought we'd be so distracted by the riches that we'd be stunned and confused. They did not know that I am accustomed to such incredible sights, for I experience something even more impressive each morning after I awake.
Is that so?
When I look in the mirror.
And you wonder why you're still single.
Oh, I don't wonder, he said. I'm fully aware that so much of me is difficult for any one woman to handle. My majesty confuses them. It's the only explanation for why they often run away.
He gave her a grin. Surprisingly, she grinned back. Usually people threw things at him when he said lines like that. She led him the rest of the way to the raised section of the city, which did kind of look like an Oathgate platform. She pointed to a structure in the near distance that looked like it might have been a palace.
If this is like Kolinar, she said, then...
They turned and walked to a solitary structure, one of the few that still had a roof, near the center of the raised platform. Inside, they found what they'd been searching for. Kind of. This had obviously once been an Oathgate chamber. It had the remnants of the same mural on the floor as the ones in other cities, but the mechanism had broken or decayed. There was no place to put a shard blade, no way to rotate it. The structure had been destroyed by the elements. All that remained was dust and corroded bits of metal. Lopin frowned, picking up some of these and feeling them with his thumb. He glanced at Rushu, who stood with her hands on her hips, her forehead wrinkled in thought. Something about this place felt wrong. Like it had lodged in his throat as he tried to swallow it, and he couldn't get it down. He had to cough it back up instead.
This is fake too, isn't it? He said.
What makes you say that? Rushu asked.
Well, the Oathgate on the Shattered Plains sat there, sure, for thousands of years, and it still worked when we found it. This place is better preserved, but here, the Oathgate mechanism has disintegrated.
I agree, she said. I might have bought it, but those gemstones, and then finding this next to the palace like in Kolinar? It's too obvious.
So where's the real one? Lopin asked.
Go fetch the sailors, she said. See if they can locate a set of stairs, or a trap door, or anything in this rubble that would let us go down.
That seemed strange to Lopin. People didn't often build down, since basements tended to fill with water. Still, Rushu was a smart one, so he shouldered his spear and walked out to do as she asked. He gathered the sailors and had them, in pairs, start searching for steps. He couldn't banish that feeling of wrongness as they did so, and he kept seeing things at the corners of his eyes. Storm him, but this place had him jumping at shadows. But Rushu was right. It didn't take too long before they found a stairwell hidden by some debris in one of the least impressive buildings on the outskirts of the central plaza, not particularly close to the palace at all.
It's probably a storm cellar,
Lopin said, following Rushu down and holding a gemstone for light.
Probably, she agreed.
Or, he said as they reached the bottom, it's just a dead end.
Indeed, the stairwell ended abruptly at a stone wall. Rushu took a small pouch off her belt, one that clinked as she moved it.
"Why did you want us to find steps, anyway?" Lopan asked.
"It's not uncommon for ancient cities to be buried over time," she said. "Krem builds up. While modern cities keep chipping at it to prevent being swallowed, many older towns were built on top of the submerged ruins of ancient ones. It's not uncommon to discover an architectural site when digging a mine, for example."
"All right," Lopan said. "So?"
"So I have double the reason to believe that city above is fake," she said. "The real Akina probably sank into the Krem years ago." She held out her hand, which glowed suddenly with a fierce light. The Ardent wore gemstones on it, connected with silver chains.
"Storms," he said. "A soul caster?"
"Yes," she said. "Let me see if I can remember how to use one of these."
"You know how?"
"Of course," she said. "The soul casting Ardents use them all the time. I went through a phase when I was very keen on joining them, until I discovered how boring their work was. Anyway, plug your ears and hold your breath."
"Why?"
He cut off as smoke filled the stairwell, making his ears scream with sudden pressure as if he'd dived deep beneath the ocean. He shouted, then coughed, then drew in some stormlight. Ahead of him, the stone wall had vanished. Rushu was wiping the soot from her face with a rag and grinning.
"You're crazy," he told her.
"Well, I suspected that if an oath gate was here in Akina, we'd have to cut through stone to get to it. I didn't anticipate this one being underground, more that it would be covered over like on the Shattered Plains. Regardless, I demanded that Navani send me with either a shard blade or a soulcaster to get through. Alas, she picked the less exciting option. I do like being right, though. It makes my stomach flutter." Lopan stepped up beside her, holding out his gemstone to reveal what she'd opened up. An underground cavern, somewhat shallow, maybe 12 feet high, and expansively wide, like a plateau.
"Storms," Lopan said. "The Oath Gate is down here."
"It must have taken extraordinary effort to hide it," Rushu said. "Whoever did this could have simply buried it, but they wanted to leave it functional. So they built a room around it, then let the Krem pile up over the years."
"But why?"
Lopan asked, stepping into the place, squinting. His light barely revealed the control building at the center. Yes, this really was an Oath Gate.
"Why hide it? Then go to all that trouble to construct fake buildings?"
"Obviously," Rushu said, "they hoped we'd find the fake one, then leave, assuming the Oath Gate lost." Lopan halted in place. The words sank in. This idea he swallowed, but it tasted terrible.
"This was like a fail-safe," he whispered. "So if someone reached the island, they'd find nothing useful."
"But we outthought them," Rushu said. "I'll have to remember to thank Brightness Rissen for her timely note. It—"
"Rushu,"
Lopan interrupted, fishing out the gemstone Huyo had given him. It wasn't blinking.
"You're a genius."
"Clearly."
"But you're also a storming fool. Gather the sailors, stay here and try not to get killed."
With that, he went dashing back up the steps, pulling in stormlight. He took to the air immediately, zipping out of the city and toward the beach. Whoever was watching this place, they'd gone to great lengths to prevent them from arriving. But once that plan had been foiled, they'd probably been willing to let the expedition gather up fake gem hearts and sail away, so long as they didn't find the real secret of the island. But he and Rushu had done just that, which meant the entire group was in serious danger even if Huyo's gemstone wasn't blinking. He needed to get to the others quickly. He was glad for his instincts, because when he arrived at the beach, he found Huyo being eaten by a monster. And that wasn't the sort of event a cousin should miss.
Rissen's first clue came as a curious sound. A clicking? Like moving carapace? She'd been waiting for a rowboat to return to take her to join the shore team. She wanted to inspect the great shell remains there, see if she could spot anything that gave her a clue on how to help Cheery Cheery. Now she turned around in her seat on the quarterdeck and looked toward the strange sound. Had Cheery Cheery returned? But no. This sound she was hearing was too loud to be made by one creature. It was the sound of hundreds of legs moving at once. What she saw in the water made her feel as if she'd been struck by a bolt of lightning. Hundreds of kremlings, crustaceans smaller than a person's fist, were crawling out of the ocean and up the side of the ship, and each seemed to be carrying a piece of flesh on it. She even spotted one with an eyeball on its back. Had these things ripped apart a person? Were they carrion feeders? Something worse? She screamed, but did so a fraction too late to be of help, for a shout went up across the ship's deck. Sailors on watch called out as the water around the wander sail boiled, spitting out thousands of similar kremlings, clacking and chittering and scrambling as they swarmed up the sides of the ship. Violet Fearspren gathered at Rizin's feet. Never before had she felt more trapped by her inability to walk. Cord muttered something in Horneater and backed away. Rizin, however, had to unstrap herself before she could escape. She was too slow. Her trembling fingers didn't seem to work as she fought with the buckles. The strange kremlings flooded over the side railing. She finally got the belt undone, but by then the things were swarming all around her. She couldn't flop onto the deck and crawl away. She'd be overrun. Instead, she tried to pull herself farther up into the seat. However, instead of crawling up her legs and attacking her, some of the kremlings pooled on the deck nearby. Then, in a bizarre display, they began to fit together. Like people grabbing hands and forming a line, the kremlings interlocked their wriggling legs, putting their backs outward. The bits of flesh and skin on them fit together like pieces of a puzzle. Human-like feet formed, then legs. Kremlings crawled up, pulling together into a writhing heap that became a torso, then finally the full figure of a nude man, lacking genitals. The head came last, eyes popping into place as kremlings squeezed inside the skull. Lines of tattoos hid the seams in the skin. For a moment, the look of it was nauseating. The figure's stomach pulsed with the creatures moving within. Lumps twitched on the arms. The skin of the legs split as if sliced open, revealing the insectile horrors within. Then it all seemed to tighten and settle down and appeared human. A near-perfect likeness, though the lines across the stomach and thighs were far more visible than the ones on the hands and face. "Hello, Rizin," Nikli said. He smiled, and his face creased along lines she now knew weren't merely wrinkles, but splits in the skin. "Your expedition has, unfortunately, proven very persistent." "Storms." Nikli wasn't a man or a void bringer. He was something worse. One of the gods from Kord's stories, a monster from Jasnah's tales, an abomination made up of hundreds of tiny pieces pretending to be a single entity. Kord put her hand on Rissen's shoulder, making her jump, then stepped deliberately forward to position herself between Nikli and Rizin. The Horneater woman spoke in her musical language, and the creature, remarkably, responded in kind. "Cord," Rizin whispered, trembling, "what is happening?" "I did not realize," Cord whispered in Vaden. "The gods who sleep not, they can appear as people."
"Do you know how to fight one?"
"I told you, you cannot," Cord said. "Lunu Anaki, he is trickster god.
warned of them during my grandmother's time when she was the watcher of the pool. We had not expected to find one of the sighted on this trip, Nikli said in Vaden. You have long guarded cultivation's perpendicularity. It is regrettable that you joined this expedition. We do not kill your people lightly. Hualinam Lunanaki Akilu. Some of the other swarms formed into similar individuals on the deck, though several remained scuttling masses. The captain gathered the remaining 10 or so sailors, but they were quickly surrounded by the strange creatures. Storms! The men had grabbed spears, but how did you fight something like this? One man stabbed a creature that drew close, and the spear stuck straight through the body. Then kremlings began to swarm out of the body cavity along the spear's length. Stop this, Rissin said, finding her voice. Nikli, let us negotiate. Please, tell me what you want.
All opportunity for negotiation has passed, Nikli said softly, looking away, a very human-like gesture of shame. You ignored my warnings, and your friends on the island did not take the bait we offered them. That was your last chance to escape safely, and some of us argued long to give you even that chance. But you are persistent, as I said. Some of us knew it would come to this. Some who are less idealistic than I. For what it is worth, Rissin, I'm sorry. I genuinely enjoyed our time together. But the very Cosmere is at stake. A few deaths now, however regrettable, will prevent catastrophe. Cord shouted something at Nikli and Horneater, and he retorted, sounding angry, then turned to shout toward the others on the deck.
That was a distraction,
Cord whispered to Rissin, turning.
Be ready.
Hold your breath.
Hold my...
Rissin yelped as Cord grabbed her around the waist. The tall woman heaved Rissin over her shoulder, leaped onto the chair, then launched them over the side of the ship, toward the dark waters beyond. 16. For a moment, Rissin was transported back to the Reshi Isles, falling, falling, hitting water. For a moment she was in that deep again after having plunged from such an incredible height, numb, watching the light retreat, unable to move, unable to save herself. Then the two moments separated. She wasn't in the Reshi Isles. She was in the frigid ocean near Akina. The shock of the cold made her want to gasp or scream. Fortunately, she kept her mouth closed as Cord, swimming mostly with her legs, propelled them downward. Deeper, deeper. Fierce Bren trailed behind Rissin like bubbles. Cord was an unexpectedly powerful swimmer, but being carried this way, pulled into the dark, made Rissin panic. It brought back not only the terror of her near-death experience, but the helplessness of the awful weeks that had followed. Previously mundane acts, like getting out of bed, visiting the washroom, or even getting herself something to eat, had suddenly become near impossible. The resulting fear, frustration, and helplessness had almost overwhelmed Rissin. She'd spent days lying in bed, feeling that she should have died rather than becoming such a burden. She had surmounted those emotions. With effort and help from her parents and Vestim, she'd realized there was so much she could still do. She could make her life better. She was not a burden. She was a person. However, as the ocean swallowed her again, she found her old fears alive and well, festering inside. The abject sense of helplessness, the terror at being entirely at the mercy of other people. And then she saw the Spren. Not the fear Spren, but luck Spren, like arrowheads with stubby, rippling bodies. They darted through the water around her and Cord, dozens, hundreds. Light from the clouded sky above vanished, and Rissen's ears hurt so much she was forced to equalize by blowing with her nose pinched. But those spren were glowing, lighting the way, urging them forward. I know you, spren, she thought. She should have panicked, should have worried about drowning. Instead, she watched the spren. How did I fall from so high and not die? Everyone called it a miracle. She twisted in Cord's grip. The spren led them toward a shimmering light emanating from some rocks ahead. A small tunnel? At last, Rissen noticed her lungs beginning to burn. She slipped out of Cord's grasp and turned, then pulled herself along the rocks. Cord came behind, and the spren ushered them, guided them through the dark depths until... Rissen pulled herself up into the air. Cord emerged a moment later. Rissen gasped for breath, trembling in the darkness. What had happened to the light? The spren? Suddenly it was completely dark, though the sound of their breath echoed against nearby walls. They seemed to have emerged into some kind of cavern under the island. Rissen grabbed some rocks at the side of the pool, clinging to them with her right arm as she reached the money pouch in her left skirt pocket for spheres. She fiddled in it, then brought out a bright diamond mark, gripping it through the thin cloth of her safe-hand glove. The light revealed Cord, her red hair plastered to her skin, holding to the rocks nearby. They were indeed in a cavern. Well, a tunnel that ended in a small pool. Cord climbed up onto the rocks, then helped Rissen out. They sat for a moment, coughing, breathing deeply. Are they still here? Rissen eventually asked. The Lux Spren?
Apalikitokoa,
Cord said, pointing in the air, though Rissen saw nothing. They appeared to you?
Yes, Rissen whispered. Under the water.
They guided us, sped us as we swam, Cord said. My father has always had the blessings of spren. They used to strengthen his arm when he drew the bow of ours in the peaks. But I've never known such blessings.
Her finger traced a path leading down the tunnel.
They are going this way.
The creatures that came onto the ship, Rissen said. Nickly, whatever he is. They can swim. I doubt we're safe down here.
Perhaps there is a way out, Cord said. I will look.
Rissen nodded, though she didn't have much hope. During her travels with her Babsk, they'd visited the Pure Lake, where he'd made her read a book on the local people. There had been an entire chapter on how the place drained during storms. And though she hadn't been able to make much sense of it, she was pretty certain a chamber this far down couldn't have air unless there was no way for it to escape upward. That meant they were cornered. Rissen settled her back against a stone, her legs stretched in front of her. Cord hurried off, dripping water and carrying a sphere for light. Rissen fished in her pockets. What did she have of use? A few more spheres? And some ruby fabrials? For a moment she thought they were from spanreeds. But no, these were the rubies from her chair, secured in metal housings with straps to tie them into place. They were paired with a set on the anchor rigged to the mast of the ship. Strange, to think how optimistic she'd been only a short time ago, before she'd led the entire crew to their doom. Would Radiance, Lopan, and Huyo be able to save them, maybe? And so you're helpless again, she thought. Just sitting around, waiting for someone else to come and take care of you? Vestim had put her in command for a reason. He trusted her. Couldn't she do herself the same honor?
Rissen!
Cord called, her voice echoing in the tunnel. The horn-eater woman appeared a short time later, panting,
her eyes wide, her figure threw crazy shadows across the walls as she waved the hand holding the sphere.
You must see.
See what? Rissen asked.
Treasure, Cord said. Plate, Rissen. Shard plate. The gods heard my prayers and have led me to him.
She stooped to heave Rissen over her shoulder again.
Wait, Rissen said. Let's try these, maybe?
She held up a ruby and activated it with a twist of part of the housing. That left it hanging in the air. Cord ran off, then returned shortly with a small bench and an antiquated spear. That worked fairly well. Using the leather straps on the fabrials, Rissen tied them to the legs of the small bench. When Cord lifted the bench and Rissen activated the fabrials, they made it hover. It did rise and fall slightly with the movements of the ship up above, but with the still ocean around here, that variation wasn't much. A short time later, Rissen pulled herself through the air with the spear, hovering alongside Cord. Though the place where they'd emerged had been unworked stone, the next section of the tunnel had been carved into a corridor. On its walls they found strange murals. People with hands forward, falling through what appeared to be portals, emerging into light? Not far past these, they entered a small room. It was perhaps 15 feet square, and Rissen's eyes were immediately drawn to the incredible mural that dominated the far wall. It depicted a sun being shattered into pieces. Cord showed her the set of shard plate, which had been carefully piled in one corner of the small chamber, along with some ornate weapons and clothing. None of those seemed to be shard weapons, but those were soul caster devices, arranged in little boxes by the wall. Four were on a bench identical to the one Rissen floated upon, and four were on the ground, probably moved by Cord. A metal door set into the stone at the left side of the room was cracked slightly open. Rissen pulled herself over and peeked through to see an even larger corridor, this one with a vaulted ceiling and fine-worked stone walls. Light shimmered somewhere farther along it, illuminating large carapace skulls with deep black eye sockets. Though she was tempted to continue exploring, something about the grand mural in the small room drew Rissen back. She pulled over to it as Cord attempted to activate the shard plate. Not a bad idea, considering their situation. Cord asked her for gemstones, and Rissen absently handed over her sphere pouch. That mural. It was circular and inlaid with golden foil. It seemed to glow with its own light. The writing on parts of it was unfamiliar to Rissen. She hadn't seen the script during any of her travels. It wasn't even the dawn chant. The peculiar letters were art themselves, curling around the outside of the exploding sun, which was divided into mostly symmetrical pieces. Four of them, each in turn broken into four smaller sections. Her spear slipped from her fingers and clattered to the floor. She swore she could feel the heat of that sun burning, washing over her. It was not angry, though she knew it was being ripped apart like a person on some awful torture device. She felt something emanating from it. Resignation? Confidence? Understanding? This is the real treasure, she thought, although she didn't know why. Those words, burning on the wall. Who had created this? She had never experienced such grandeur. She traced the pieces of breaking sunlight with her eyes. Gold foil on the inside, red foil tracing the outer lines to give them depth and definition. She counted the shards in her mind over and over, feeling a reverence to the number. The sun held her. You were brought here, she thought to herself, by one of the guardians of ancient sins. Of course she had been. That made sense. Wait, did it?
Yes, she thought.
You were. There are few of them left. And so the sleepless take up the task.
Naturally. All that nonsense on the surface of the island? Distractions. Intended to keep anyone from looking for this.
Rissen shook herself, tearing her eyes away from the mural. Those had felt like someone else's thoughts, intruding into her mind. What was happening to her? Why had she dropped her spear? After all that work to be able to move on her own, she'd simply let go? She reached down, but she was too far up in the air. As she leaned over, she felt a pressure on her mind, the mural, calling to her. Nearby, Cord muttered softly. Rissen glanced over to find the horn-eater woman had the shard plate boots on and was now trying to force the breastplate to take her spheres.
I think you need free gemstones, Cord, Rissen said. Not ones encased in glass.
I don't have enough of those, Cord said.
We could use these.
Rissen gestured to the rubies under her bench. Cord hesitated.
It's all right, Rissen said. If you can get that plate working, you might be able to defend us.
Cord nodded, striding over to help Rissen down. She felt regretful. Every time she had a taste of freedom, something happened to steal it away from her. Cord sat Rissen on the cold stones, then pried the four rubies from their housings. She hooked them into the greaves of the plate, which she then attached to her legs. They tightened immediately, locking into place. She glanced at the breastplate.
We need more.
Rissen pointed to the cracked door on the other side of the room.
I saw light that direction, in the larger tunnel. Maybe gemstones?
Cord rushed over and pulled open the door, looking past the enormous carapace skulls toward the distant light. There are Aspren, Cord said, then began walking that way, her metal boots clomping on the ground. She carried the breastplate with her, though it seemed extremely heavy. Rissen turned, trying not to look at the wall, which was growing even warmer. Unfortunately, she soon heard splashes coming from the direction of the pool. Their enemy had found them.
Guardian of ancient sins, she thought. What did that mean? Why did the idea repeat over and over in her mind?
She felt the mural looming, overshadowing her. Slowly she turned and gazed up at the exploding sun.
Accept it. Know it. Change.
It stilled, waiting for...
Yes,
Rissen whispered. Something slammed into her mind. It streamed from the mural through her eyes, searing her skull. It gripped her, held to her, joined with her. Light consumed Rissen entirely. A moment later, she found herself panting on the ground. She blinked, then felt at her eyes. Though tears leaked from the corners, her skin wasn't on fire, and she hadn't been blinded. She glanced up at the mural and noted it was unchanged, except she no longer felt warmth from it. It was only a mural. Beautiful, yes, but no longer...
No longer what? What had changed?
Scuttling sounds. Hundreds of little footsteps on the stone coming from behind. She twisted and grabbed the spear that she'd been using to move earlier, but she was no soldier. So what was she? Useless? No, she thought, determined never to sink into that self-pity again. I am far from useless. It was time to prove she deserved Vestim's trust.
17. Lopin zipped straight toward the giant sea monster. It looked vaguely like an enormous grub with a wicked beak of a face.
It had spindly arms running all the way along its body and had reared up so it was mostly vertical, using its pointed limbs like spears to try to skewer the sailors beneath. Huyo was literally inside the thing's mouth, holding its mandibles apart with a spear, barely preventing himself from being crushed. So Lopan was able to soar up and grab Huyo by the arm, then tow him out of the way. The thing snapped its mouth closed behind them, breaking the spear with an awful crack. Sailors huddled in the skulls on the beach using the carapace as cover, clutching spears and cowering before the monster. It was as tall as a building, swarming with arrowhead Luxbren. Lopan pulled to a stop in the air, holding Huyo. The cousins met one another's eyes. Then Huyo groaned,
"I'm never going to hear the end of this, am I?"
"Ha!" Lopan said. "You were going to get eaten. You were going to be swallowed by a giant monster that looks like something you'd step on during worming season."
"Can we focus on the fight?"
"Hey, have you heard about the time I saved Huyo from being swallowed? Oh yes, he was going to get eaten by a monster uglier than the women he courts. And I flew into the thing's mouth to save him. Off the tongue. Then I was very humble about having done such a heroic deed."
"Leave that last part off," Huyo said. "It will make them easily discern that you are lying."
He breathed in, borrowing stormlight from Lopan's spheres.
"Watch out. There are some Kremlings around here that steal stormlight."
"Is it the one the boss lady had?"
"No, smaller," Huyo said, lashing himself so he hovered in the air. "And of a different breed. I didn't get a good look, but I think they flew around in a little swarm."
Huyo swooped down and snatched a new spear off the ground. Lopan raised his, glancing at Rua, who had changed shape to mimic that of the monster. He bounced around, growling. The monster turned toward them and swiped with a spear-like limb, causing a rush of wind as Lopan ducked it.
"You know," Lopan said to Rua, "now would be an excellent time for you to decide that you'd like to be a shard blade."
Rua wagged a crustacean finger at him, an annoyed gesture that conveyed, "You know you have to earn that."
"I will protect even those I hate," Lopan said. "See, I can say it."
He dodged again.
"It's easy."
Rua monster wagged another limb.
"But I don't hate anyone," Lopan complained, "and nobody hates me. I'm the Lopan. How could they? These rules sure aren't fair."
Rua monster shrugged.
"You used to be on my side on this one, Nocco," Lopan grumbled. "This is Fenderana's fault, isn't it? You shouldn't listen to her lectures."
This probably wasn't the time for such a conversation. They had a monster to defeat. Spear in hand, Lopan swooped in to distract it as it tried to go after some of the sailors.
Rissen arranged herself meticulously. She pulled over the bench she'd been sitting on earlier and placed it in front of her. It was a little too high and thin to be a Thalen merchant's deal table, but it was a reasonable approximation. If you wanted to deal in the traditional way, you sat on mats on the floor, opposite the table from one another. She managed to get her legs crossed, her back to the wall with the mural to help prop herself up. She put her hands palm down on the table, in the formal dealing posture, and tried to remember her lessons. The creatures came in along the walls and ceiling. They swarmed in that same nauseating way. Heaps of Kremlings snapping together into something that imitated a human, but with distressing lumps shifting under the skin. Soon, Nikli stood in front of her. Rissen controlled her trembling as best she could, ignoring the fear spren, then turned her hands palm upward. "This," she said, "is the traditional sign inviting the initiation of a trade deal between two Thalen merchants. I'm not sure how much of our culture you picked up during your time imitating a human."
"I picked up enough," Nikli said, stepping forward. Two other figures remained behind. One might have been imitating a male, the other a female, though it was hard to tell.
Nickley picked up a robe draped across a few spears in the pile of armor, then pulled it on.
I'm young among my people, but I have lived quite a long time. I sailed with Longbrow, you know. I liked him, for all his boasting.
Storms. Longbrow was 400 years dead. Rissen steeled herself.
Oh, storms!
She was swimming in water far over her head, and there was still that strange heat in the back of her mind. The pressure, the command. She gestured toward the other side of the table.
Sit. Let us negotiate.
There is nothing to negotiate, Rissen,
Nickley said.
I'm sorry, but I have a duty to the entire Cosmere.
Everyone wants something,
Rissen said, sweat trickling down the sides of her face.
Everyone has needs. It is my job to connect the needs to the people.
And what is it you assume I need?
Nickley asked. She met the thing's gaze.
You need someone to keep your secrets.
18.
Hey ho, yo! Lopin shouted. I was wrong about this monster resembling the women you caught. It actually looks like you in the mornings, before you've had your onachala.
A leg speared down near Lopin, tossing up chips of rock as it struck the ground.
Acts like you too,
Lopin said, lashing himself backward. Mostly he was keeping the beast's attention. He wanted it focused on him and Huyo, not the sailors. Indeed, because of Huyo's efforts earlier, it looked like only one sailor had been seriously injured so far. Fimkin was trying to bind the man's wounds while the rest had grabbed an extra stock of spears from the rowboats. The men proved adept with the weapons, throwing them to try to stick them in the creature's eyes. One got close, bouncing off the carapace right near an eye. The thing roared and reared up, a giant pink-white tube of death covered in carapace. Though the dozen or so arms seemed spindly by comparison, they were thick as tree trunks. They alternated between trying to spear Lopin and trying to swat him from the sky. Lopin wiped his brow, then ordered the sailors to back up farther ashore. Unfortunately, while the creature seemed like it belonged in the water, it was mobile enough on the shore to be dangerous, using its legs to scoot along, slug-like. It turned toward the sailors again, so Lopin buzzed in close, Rua at his side, and drew its attention. He tried spearing the thing in the head near the neck, but his weapon bounced off. The monster was bulbous like a grub, but far better armored. Damnation! Lopin lashed himself and wove between its swinging arms. Ha! At least it was slow-moving like a grub. The thing could barely... Wham! Lopin ended up sprawled against a boulder, upside down, ribs screaming as they knit back together with stormlight.
Radiant Lopin, Kistled said, ducking in close. Are you all right? Feel like a piece of snot, Lopin said, groaning. Following a sneeze.
He peeled himself off the rock and flopped down next to Kistled.
My spear can't get through that thing's carapace.
We need a short blade, Kistled said. Can't you summon one?
Afraid not, Lopin said. It's political.
Nearby, Huyo was drawing the thing's attention, but his stormlight was waning.
Don't get eaten again, Lopin called. But if you do, try not to get sneezed out. It's awful.
Political? Kistled asked.
You've got to say these words, Lopin said. And I said them. Because they're good words. But the Stormfather, sure, he has no sense of style.
He glanced up at the sky.
This would be a great time, O blustery one. I will protect those I hate. I've got it, you den goncho god thing.
No response. Lopin sighed, then shouldered his spear.
All right. So who you and I will try to lead it farther inland? Then you and your sailors, sure, you grab those boats and try to get to the ship.
We can't let it follow us to the Wonder Sail, Kistled said. A great shell like that could sink the ship.
Yeah, well, then we need to all retreat and try to lead it inward. We can maybe take shelter in the buildings inland.
What if, in running, we encourage it to move out and attack the ship?
We'll just have to deal with that if it happens, all right? Hoyo and I will distract it. The rest of you prepare to retreat up to the fallen city.
Kistled hesitated, then nodded. Lopan lashed himself into the air and shot toward the thing. Maybe if he could get in close while it was focused on Hoyo, he could stab it real good. He also needed to give Hoyo some more stormlight. Lopan had plenty, sure, in his pouches. He flew around behind the thing, but it seemed ready for this. It kept shifting, keeping one of its beady jet-black eyes toward Lopan while it slammed its arms toward Hoyo. Hoyo shouted at it, fortunately drawing its attention.
There,
Lopan thought, preparing his spear. He got in closer. When it glanced toward him again, he'd lash the spear directly into its eye. Lopan felt a sudden chill. A coldness began at his back, right between his shoulder blades, then washed through him. Cold enough that it made him jerk upright, stunned, unable to move as he felt something leached from him. His stormlight. He managed to spin in the air, trying to swing his spear and attack, but it was too late. He glimpsed a swarm of small kremlings flying behind him, different from the one Rissen had as a pet. Smaller, maybe the size of his fist, and more bulbous, the 24 creatures barely managed to hang in the air, but their feeding had been enough to drain him. As he dropped through the air, he felt panic. They'd gotten his pouches, too. There was nothing left to suck in. He hit. Hard. Something snapped in his leg. The monster undulated toward him, opening its awful maw and glaring with those terrible eyes. It seemed eager as it raised its arms to smash him.
You were there when I met Navani Kurlin, Rissen said to Nickley. You know she isn't the type to be easily dissuaded.
The mother of machines.
Nickley said it like a distinctive title.
Yes, we are aware.
You tried to scare away her windrunners when they investigated this island, Rissen said. So she sent a ship? What do you think will happen if that ship vanishes mysteriously? You think she'll give up? You'll see a fleet next. Nickley sighed, then met her eyes.
You assume we don't have plans in place, Rissen, he said.
He seemed genuine. Though he was made up of monsters inside, he appeared to be the person she'd come to know during their travels. Your plans so far haven't worked, Rissen said. Why would you assume one to scare off the Radiant's will?
I wish you'd taken our bait, he said. Some of us wanted to sink your ship as soon as it breached the storm, but we persuaded them. We told them you'd be happy with the gem hearts. You were supposed to also locate a little stash of maps and writings from long ago. We would have made sure you found it before leaving. Once you returned to Queen Navani, you'd have discovered that the gem hearts were fake. The writings would prove to be the remnants of an old pirate scheme from the days before this place was surrounded with a storm. You'd have learned those pirates used legends of treasure to lure people to Akina, that they'd spread fake gemstones on the beaches to draw their marks in and distract them before attacking. It would have been so neat, so easy. With those stories in hand, everyone would dismiss the legends about riches on Akina. They'd leave us alone. No one would have to die, except.
There's an oath gate here, Rissen said. They'll never leave it alone, Nickley.
They will think it destroyed, Nickley said. After what must regrettably be done here to you and your crew, some of us will imitate sailors. Your ship will limp back to port, and we will tell the story. A storm that cost too many lives while getting through it. A fight with a strange great shell. A destroyed Oathgate, fake gem hearts. Everyone will leave us alone after that.
Damnation. That might work.
But Vestim's calm voice seemed to whisper to her from across the ocean. This was her moment, the most important deal of her life. What did they want? What did they say they wanted?
Storms, I'm not ready for something like this, she thought.
You'll have to do it anyway. She took a deep breath.
You truly think you can imitate my ship's sailors well enough to fool people who knew them? You use a body with tattoos, I assume to hide the seams in your skin. You don't quite know how to act Thalen, so you imitate a foreigner. You actually think this subterfuge will work? Or will it instead spread more mystery?
Nickley met her eyes but didn't reply.
That's been your problem all along, Rissen said. Each lie you spin makes the mystery more entrancing. You want to protect this place. What if I could help you?
Rissen's mouth had gone dry, but she continued holding the creature's eyes. No, Nickley's eyes. She had to see him as the person she knew. That was someone she could talk to, persuade. He might be some nightmare from the depths, but he was still a person, and people had needs. They were interrupted by footsteps at the door. Cord stepped in wearing the breastplate, which she'd apparently managed to power. Indeed, her fist glowed with gemstones she'd found. On one hand, she looked somewhat comical, wearing only half of the armor. Her exposed head and arms seemed child's size, with the rest of the plate in place and functioning. Yet her solemn expression, the way she slammed the butt of a spear down beside her, Rissen found herself bolstered by the young woman's determination. Cord said something loudly in her own language.
We may speak in Vaden, Nickley said, so Rissen may understand.
Very well, Cord said. I challenge you. You must duel me now to the death.
I think you'll find I cannot be defeated by a mortal, Nickley said. You don't know what you're asking.
Is that a yes? Cord bellowed.
If you insist.
Ha! She said. You have been tricked, God. I am Hualinam Lunanakiakilu, the daughter of Numuhuku Makiakiaya Lunamor, the Falala Likino. He who drew the bow of ours at the dawn of the new millennium, heralding the years of change. If you were to kill me, you would be violating the ancient pact of the Seven Peaks, and so must now forfeit the battle.
Nickley blinked in what seemed like a very human show of utter confusion.
I have no idea what any of that means, he said.
You don't? Cord asked.
No.
Excuse me.
She hurried over to Rissen, each footstep clanking on the stone. She knelt.
Are you well?
Well as I can be, Rissen said. Cord, I think they're going to kill everyone to keep their secret.
They don't seem to know about the ancient treaties, Cord whispered. And in truth, those treaties were made with other gods.
I had hoped the gods who sleep not would be similarly bound, but now I am not certain.
She looked down. I am no warrior, Rissen. I wish to be one and have claimed this plate, but I haven't trained to fight. I don't know if these gods can even be fought. In the stories, you must always trick them.
I would rather, Rissen said, her voice loud enough for Nickley to hear, simply reach an agreement. Surely they can be persuaded.
Perhaps, Cord said. The gods who sleep not are guardians of life. They seek to prevent its end. Use that.
Rissen studied Nickley. He and the others could have killed her by now, but they waited. They were willing to talk. They said there was no solution. But if that were the case, why was she still alive?
Is Cord right? Rissen asked. Are you protectors of life?
We, Nickley said. We have seen the end of worlds and vowed never to let such an awful event happen again. But we will kill the few to protect the many if we must.
What if I could provide you with another option that didn't